Log Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Whole Scoop. We are a health and wellness radio show where our guests are always highly credentialed. That is the stipulation to be on this show. If you're getting it from us, you know that we've got really fabulous guests that are absolutely credentialed in what we're talking about. I am your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian practicing for way more than I really want to admit, so we're going to skip that part. I'm at naturallynutritioninc.com if you want to find me. Tonight's show, pretty interesting stuff. How well does your doctor know you? You know, is it important? Sure. And are you sure that your doctor knows you? You might think he or she does, but I don't know. Maybe after tonight's show might give you pause to start questioning that. Anyway, I'm going to do this business and tell you that while our guests are always highly credentialed on the topics we discuss, it's recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions that we talk about. You know that, but I have to say it. So, call number is 347-855-8894, 347-855-8894. You can talk to us, direct questions, give us comments on our Facebook blog page, which is the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group. And we have a website, thewholescoopradio.com, where you'll find more information on our guests and some archived shows. And I should tell you, I don't say it enough, all of our shows are archived. If you come over to the Blog Talk site and to the website that I just mentioned, thewholescoopradio.com, and you can access any of our shows, it's always a good thing because everybody's busy these days, and if there's a show that might, you know, spark your interest with something that you're interested in, we've been doing this show for 4 years now, so got a lot of stuff out there. We will be taking questions later on in the show, and at that point, we'll call out the last four digits of your telephone number. If you're calling in with a question, remember to press the number 1 to get in the queue. Lately, you know, we've had people ask questions. Other times we've had them blog questions, and sometimes they show up after the show and say, hey, you know, you did a great job and you answered my question. So we'll see how it goes tonight. But please, if you want to ask a question, 347-855-8894, press the number 1 to get in the queue. And I think that will take care of the business. So who do we have tonight? We have one of the Whole Scoop's favorite guests. She's just a fabulous, fabulous person. She's been with us a couple of times now, and every time she always has something enlightening to say. And I was just on the phone with her prior to getting on air, and she did it again. So Dr. Toni Muzzinegro is here, and she is an osteopathic doc, and she does all kinds of things. But let me just tell you, she's originally from Southwest Florida, graduated from the University of Florida. She attended medical school at Nova Southeastern University in osteopathic medicine in Fort Lauderdale, and she completed her family practice residency in Botsford Hospital in Farmington Hills, Michigan, became board-certified family practice physician in 2010. She's greatly enjoyed working in direct primary care, and if you've listened to this show before, you know we've talked about that. We're going to explain it a little more for those of you who are joining us for the first time, because it is different, and it is something that you need to know about. And the direct primary care allowed her to connect with patients on a more personal level and offer them more timely and thorough care, which is exactly the topic of tonight. She is passionate about empowering her patients to take control of their health and health care by way of education and a relationship based on trust and mutual respect. She's got a multitude of things to say, but instead of listening to me, let's just say hello. Hey, Dr. Muzzy, how are you?
Fantastic, Carol. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, so glad you're here. This is it's always good to have you. You know, I usually do all kinds of stats when I open up a show and I tell people, you know, this and that, whatever, and then we kind of just get into the show. Well, tonight's a little different because tonight I really want to talk about you and I really want to talk about what you do because you do direct primary care, and, you know, the name of the show is How Well Does Your Doctor Know You and Are You Sure? And you define that just by virtue of what you do on a daily basis and what type of practice that you have. So I will just open with a slight statistic, and I don't think this will be a big surprise to anybody. When people go and visit their doctors, most of the time in traditional doctor offices or when doctor visits, they get about 10 minutes of time from their physician, and their physician is actually seeing 25 to 30 people a day. So if you put that together, 25 to 30 people a day, and you get 10 minutes, we all get geared up. We do. We get geared up. We say, okay, he's coming, she's coming. It's going to be, I got to get my points out. I got to remember to say this. I got to remember to say that. And then you get out of the office, and you go, you know what? I forgot to do that. I forgot to say that. Or what did he say about this? Because we all get this stuff in our heads, and sometimes we even forget to listen. But what happens on the doctor's end of that? I know that you've experienced that firsthand, and that is the biggest reason why you do what you do today. So, you want to talk about that versus what you do? You want to kind of give us an overview?
Certainly. Yeah, sure. So, I guess for any of your listeners who aren't familiar yet with what direct primary care is, just kind of a brief synopsis. It's a new model for healthcare delivery, specifically for primary care, that is membership-based, and essentially it is then a direct interaction between the primary care physician and the patient. And by direct, I mean there's no third-party involvement whatsoever. So direct primary care physicians bill essentially usually a reasonable monthly amount. At our practice, it's anywhere from 60 for, you know, like 60 to 80 for most adults per month. And so in that regard, that's essentially how the doctor gets paid. And the doctor then doesn't have to be beholden to insurance companies. So what does that do? That allows the doctor then to simply focus on the patient's needs and listening to the patient and getting down to the root of the problem during the visits, as opposed to worrying about checking boxes, meeting criteria for billing, and being glued to the electronic medical record, which unfortunately has now become a reality, as anybody who's been to any doc, you know, in the past 5 to 10 years is unfortunately aware of. And so our office visits then can be anywhere from a half an hour to an hour and a half and sometimes two. And, you know, our initial visit is usually the longer, where we actually have the ability to go through everything, from your diet to your sleep to your stressors, exercise, and, you know, essentially really just trying to get to know you and build a foundation for future, for future care. And we find that, you know, that once you've built that trusting relationship, future interactions and tend to go much more smoothly, because everybody understands, what the patient is about and what their beliefs or interests and so on and so forth.
So if I come to see you as a new patient, I can expect to spend 2 hours in your office or with you?
So, yeah, our typical new patient appointments, it would be about an hour and a half with the doctor, probably about 2 hours in the office if you're having blood work, EKG, and that kind of thing done. But, yeah, so it's they're not short visits. And, you know, people are busy, and sometimes they don't want to spend an hour and a half, and that's fine too. And so we essentially ask the patient how much time they have for us, you know, as opposed to it being how much time we have for them.
So I'm just trying to wrap my head around it if I'm listening and hearing this for the first time, which I'm not, because we've talked about this before. But, you know, for those that are hearing it for the first time, it can be a little intimidating. I have to spend an hour and a half with my doctor. You know, that,
yeah.
that can be a little intimidating, don't you think?
Right. Until you know who they are, at least. You're like, I don't know. An hour and a half with anybody sounds like an awful long time.
Yeah, so tell me what that's like, you know, for the first-time person that really didn't know
sure.
what to expect and kind of get the deer in the headlights look maybe and go, you know, or,
like,
you know,
oh,
and I'm sure they
are going there.
Right.
Yeah, we go to all those places, you know, like within reason, but there's a lot to be discussed, right? Your family history, your social history, you know, whether you're a smoker or not, whether you're a drinker and your occupation is very important, whether you have pet, you know, that kind of thing, surgeries. I mean, that all of that is pretty typical and standard for a family practice doc's, you know, first visit. It's just the level of depth that we're able to take it to and kind of do it in a setting that's not rushed, you know. And then really we pick apart everything. If people are interested in really taking a multidisciplinary approach to affecting change in their health and optimizing their health, then, you know, then we definitely will go through, you know, every aspect. Stress. Are you handling stress well? Are you sleeping well? You know, what are you eating? What are you not eating? And, you know, are you taking any supplements? Do you need any supplements? You know, and we're able to offer some, you know, further type of lab testing probably than what the standard family practice office is able to, strictly because we have the time, you know, number one. And number two, you know, it doesn't necessarily always, you know, we don't have to ask anybody's permission, right? If we think it's indicated and the patient agrees to it, we can go deeper, do advanced, you know, nutritional testing, advanced cardio metabolic testing, you know, all these things that kind of tell us like what's beneath the surface. And certainly, you know, as I practiced in standard family practice before, and you do as best you can, right, with the time and the resources that you have and with the restrictions that insurance companies put on you. But let's be honest, I mean, we're missing our mark a lot of time if we're not doing, you know, say advanced cholesterol lipid testing. You could find out that you have, you know, reasonable cholesterol numbers until you do your advanced testing and you realize, well, they're not in the right balance, and that could then put you at potentially higher risk for heart disease. Isn't that something you want to know, you know? And unfortunately,
right.
You know, in regular office, things like that aren't routinely discussed or ordered. For various reasons, you know, and I'm just very fortunate to be practicing in a setting that allows me to dig deeper like that.
Well, and I think let's just kind of throw the caveat out too that, you know, yeah, most traditional practices aren't able to do that kind of testing, and it's not because anybody's picked a bad doctor. It's because
exactly.
There are standards.
Absolutely.
And only they can. You know, they can only go so far. You're able to take it further because you don't have those restrictions on you.
Exactly.
And that's fabulous, you know. But let's just get the elephant in the room out of the way here and talk about if you don't do insurance, because that was probably the other gasp we almost, you know, the silent gasp that we heard from people listening on this show going, okay, you don't do insurance, then how do I pay for this? What goes on if I pay you so many dollars a month? Then what about these tests and how does that work?
Yeah, so you know, various different direct primary care offices have different policies on how to do it, but essentially right now the membership fee at our practice covers my time, right, and my care for you and your visits essentially. So if you come to, you know, one visit in a year or 10 or 20 visits in a year, you're still going to pay that same $60 a month. Blood work is a separate fee. We've negotiated reduced cash rates through Quest. And so as an example, for, you know, for an adult over 40 who I like to go a little bit deeper, do a little bit of the more detailed cholesterol testing, plus the thyroid, the liver, the kidneys, the vitamin D, you know, the diabetes screening, the hemoglobin A1C, that runs about $90, I think it's around $90 through our practice. And younger adults, their full panel is around $50. And so obviously that's a stark contrast to what people are used to seeing, you know, the cash price of my what's $50 at our practice in the insurance world would probably be closer to like $300 or $350.
Right.
And, you know, if you were to do, you know, the more in-depth testing that we do in patients over 40, you know, then you're talking easily probably like, I don't know, $500-$600. It's been a while since I repriced it out, but so thankfully labs are willing to cooperate with us because we pay them directly. Patients pay us directly. They don't have to have the accounts receivable. They don't have to go through insurance billing and all of that. They get, you know, kind of paid in real time, and that's not a place where we actually make a profit. You know, we're just there to kind of be the middleman and the liaison, so to speak, and, you know, confer those savings, those cash savings onto the patient.
Okay. So I find those prices to be, you know, quite reasonable. Most people have a deductible. Most people pay a copay when they go into a doctor's office, and then they have a deductible to meet anyway. There's not a huge difference when you're just talking about labs, but if you go a little further and you go a little more extensive, then somebody would have to have some kind of, I mean, if they have to go to the hospital, obviously insurance would pick up on that, correct?
Certainly. So we're not a replacement for insurance by any means, but more as, like, say, for instance, like you said, a higher deductible plan, and there's obviously many different colors of the rainbow, shades of gray, when it comes to insurance plans, as we all know, and nobody can really wrap their brain around what covers what and what's not covered, and I think they like to keep it that way, keep us guessing.
Yeah, and it's just getting, it's becoming more confusing because we're changing everything again.
People who are very entrenched into healthcare have a very difficult time decoding these insurance plans. But anyhow, direct primary care tends to pair best with like a higher deductible plan. And so if a patient has, you know, a $5,000 deductible or more, doing a direct primary care membership, you would essentially be trying to close that gap and, you know, banking on the fact that pretty much your primary care should account for like 80-85% of your overall healthcare needs over the course of a year. It's not insurance, but it's almost like you're insuring your gap a little bit and helping fill in the gap. And most people don't ever meet their deductible, thankfully. And statistics definitely show that patients who are of, you know, or a member of direct primary care practice tend to utilize after-hours care, emergency care less, which tends to drive the overall cost of health care down because they have access to the doctor by way of cell phone, text, email, essentially around the clock. You know, anytime I'm not showering or, you know, indisposed otherwise, you know, I get calls and texts from patients,
they have direct access.
And so if you can, So if you can answer that simple question that was terrifying to the patient, but maybe once you break it down, isn't so terrifying and keep them from seeking after hours care at an ER and urgent care, then that's great, you know, and that's
not seeking care because they don't want to go through the hassle or they can't.
Right, or that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or they can't get an appointment fast enough.
Until the lid blows off. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But truly, right. I mean, anybody with the disposable income who is fed up with the status quo and healthcare and not being able to get in with their primary care doc for, you know, weeks, not being able to get in same day when they're sick or you know, have needs, not being able to get a hold of somebody when something important is going on after hours. So we would be, you know, kind of a perfect solution really for anybody in any of those categories, whether or not you have a high deductible. You know what I mean? It's just, do you
right.
want to have the ability to call somebody when you need them? So.
Okay, so that covers the elephant that everybody was already thinking about. So we're gonna move on to the actual practice, and let's just talk about some of the. Well, let's just break it down to, like, okay, let's go back to that deer in the headlight look. Can you share maybe a story with us on somebody who was just, like, totally taken aback by the fact that they spent so much time with you, or you spent so much time with them? Let's go with that. And then by the end of the visit, they realized, or by, you know, the second or third time they were in, they realized just what an impact that positive impact that had on them. Or, you know, can you kind of give us an evolutionary kind of story that allows,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
I think that, you know, unfortunately people are conditioned to be a little
mm-hmm.
bit defensive when they seek healthcare. And just from, you know, past experiences, a lot of people haven't felt like they've been heard, you know, not because of anybody's fault, just because of the system itself. So
right.
feeling like they're not able to get their point across, not able to make the doctor really understand, like, what they're trying to say, and heeding what their opinion is about what might be going on. So I kind of find that people's defenses are often up in the beginning of the visit, and just, you know, and it just happens naturally. But as the progression of the visit goes, and, you know, there's a line of questioning, basically, you know, to take it deeper with everything that they say, we're like, yeah, I really want to know, like, what it is you're thinking, what's your experience been, and, you know, what are your thoughts? And you just kind of, like, see the ice melt away. It's the craziest thing. And, it, you know, a patient left a sarcastic comment on one of our reviews, something along the lines of, it did take a while to get used to Dr. Muzzy, because I wasn't used to people, you know, my doctor actually, like, listening to me, you know, which kind of made me chuckle. But again, it's not the doctors. It's not that they don't want to do all of this. It's just that they're working in a system that doesn't afford them the time to do so. But, yeah, I mean, it's like every single patient. There's no, like, one patient where there was just an epiphany. It's almost every new patient that I see, you know, like, there's just that progression. Like, oh, like, she really actually, like, wants to hear what I say, and this is cool, so I don't have to, like, force the issue, you know.
And how do you get them used to being able to contact you after hours and stuff? Like, how do you – I mean, because, you know, most of us just – that's not even a consideration, because we just know better. You know, that's just never
yeah. –
that's not going to happen.
And, you know,
so
it
how
has
do you
to be within reason, right? You don't want to just have, you know, people texting you at all hours for any old thing that crosses
right.
their mind. Really,
sure.
like, the after hours is for – something that's time sensitive, something that's urgent, something that couldn't have been taken care of otherwise. But, like, if there is anything like that going on, you better darn well tell me, because I would hate to hear about it, you know, after the fact or the next day that you avoided calling, you know. But
right.
we essentially we just give people, you know, all of our contact info when they sign up, and just let them know that I'm available, you know, and that's kind of part of the deal, and that's what direct primary care is, and that's, you know, I love that about it. Like, I can't imagine at this point that I've been working in this model for 3 years, like, I can't imagine, like, having to miss that information, right? Like, it's been that way,
yeah.
you know, usually we take call, like, a week at a time or whatever, but if your patient needs something, they might end up talking to another doc, and you might not find out about it until you see their
right.
chart in 3 months, and, you know, that would be
right.
a shame. But, like, I feel like that now, you know.
Yeah, so how does that can you give us an example of the model that you're using, that you of which you practice, how you may have caught something that you would not have caught maybe on a traditional basis of the 10-minute visit every 3 months?
I don't know about catching something or not catching something. I feel like just
it was a badly structured sentence for what we're talking about, but.
I'm pretty passionate about diabetes, and it's something I spent a lot of my time, young professional life, kind of researching and such. I've been personally affected by it, multiple family members. So I kind of take that as, that's just kind of like my one of my driving forces, really. And recently I had a couple actually who became members of the practice, awesome couple, hilarious, fun beer. One of them just turned out to be diabetic. And, they hadn't sought health care for a while. They just kind of off doing their own thing. But diabetic, But I have to think that in a normal practice, it would have been a progression of, medication, then maybe next medication, then potentially time goes by and nothing else changes in insulin, which is, unfortunately the progression that we see with insulin resistance. But this particular patient, we had a lot of time to sit down and talk about the metabolics of it and what she needed to do diet-wise. And she literally in 3 months went from being well into the diabetic range to being in the not even pre-diabetic, but the non-diabetic range. Had lost,
wow.
I think, 40 pounds. I mean, it was an unbelievable turnaround. And, she needed supplementation of a few things to improve her insulin sensitivity, like chromium, like zinc and magnesium. And, these are things that wouldn't ever typically come up in a normal practice. I know that when I was practicing in standard medicine, I never really thought about those things, didn't really bring them up. So we have her on the regimen, and she crushed it, and all the credit obviously goes to her, but I felt very fortunate to have been able to actually talk with her in that way to where she got
That's
it.
Fabulous.
And she was
That's
like,
great
oh yeah,
story.
this is what I need to do. And she did it. And I was like, you crushed that. And I was so proud. And, I brag about it all the time. But I think it's like a testament to the model. We were able to not just say like, okay, you're diabetic, here, take this. And I mean, every doctor, counsels their patient about diet, but we really had probably like an hour and a half discussion specifically, and making our plans. And she did it, she did it and she turned it around and,
That's great.
Yeah, so.
Really, really fabulous.
Absolutely.
And the fact that, she got to work directly with you and heard directly from you what to do. Because let's face it, yeah, you're right. Every doc does talk to their patient about diet. But how that usually goes is, here's some information. This is what you need to do. See you later. Bye. Not a criticism. What that is just reality, because they don't have the time. And they don't really, sadly to say, they don't really even have the expertise to be talking about it, because it's not something that they focus on,
Right.
So
right.
They know
yeah,
it.
The amount of training
it,
that we get in nutrition is pretty minimal, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
That physician.
And
they, as a general
all
rule.
The time. So, you kind of have to just give it up to this is the latest information, which leaves the patient going, okay, this is the sheet I have to follow, but, I don't really like this stuff, or I really can't eat this, or that's not the way that I eat, or that's not how I can, make it work for me, and
right.
Now what do I do?
Right.
But you
right.
got to do
right.
all that, and she got to
right.
do that directly.
And then in real time. Making the changes that need to be made and discussing pitfalls
right.
and,
Right.
Yeah.
And that's just amazing. That right there speaks volumes to the type of practice that you have versus what most people, you know, are used to. And again, it doesn't mean that what people are used to is bad. It just means that this is different. This is more patient-centered, and it's more patient-unique in that everybody is different and you're able to look at them and say, okay, yeah, this lady may have had diabetes, but what else about that particular lady? You were able to take in the whole of her and make a plan for her, as opposed to, you have diabetes, here's the plan that's generally accepted, go do it. And that's hugely different.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah, once you learn you have like a stubborn patient, you need to work that stubborn, right? That stubborn needs to work
right.
for them and not against them.
Right.
And there's all different kinds, but yeah.
Well, you know, so that being said, let's just go with that for a second, okay? So let's take the average person that has diabetes, sees their physician, gets on some metformin, is told to change their diet around so they automatically cut down on sugar, and that's about it.
Right.
And then they kind of go further from that, and they're worried about it. They don't know what else to do with it. And then a couple months go by, and they're still feeling all right. They know their blood sugars are off, and they might, you know, might have to adjust the metformin, maybe do some glipizide, do something else. And they do an A1C and it's still high, but now they've got some cardiac issues that they didn't know about, you know, so it kind of progresses. So let's just talk about the progression of what diabetes can lead to, and then let's
sure.
take it back to the patient that you just described that was able to kind of crush it and just thwart it
yeah,
from
just
there.
Stop it. Just halt the momentum. I think what we find now is what we know now that we didn't realize in the past is that insulin resistance is the original problem. And
mm-hmm.
once you become insulin resistant, that's a difficult roller coaster to get off of, because it's essentially a bit of a snowball effect, because you know the more your body's secreting insulin. Because your receptors are downregulated, your cells feel starved of sugar, and your body relatively thinks, oh, we don't have enough sugar, right? So we must, you know, then make you crave the kinds of foods that are going to help raise your blood sugar. And then what happens? Then you secrete even more insulin. It's a perpetual cycle. So we know that having elevated blood sugar, you know, can have effects down the line on multiple different parts of our bodies, the heart being one of the biggest and most important, increasing risk of atherosclerosis, because sugar, we know, promotes inflammation, and inflammation is thought now to play at least as large, maybe larger role in atherosclerosis or plaque and clogging of the arteries. And, so definitely coronary artery disease is higher risk, or people who are diabetic, especially uncontrolled diabetic, are higher risk for coronary artery disease and heart attacks. In that same regard, stroke risk is higher as well, you know, and of course we see, you know, unfortunately, end stage effects on the kidneys. And the kidneys stop filtering as well at a certain point, start spilling protein into the urine, which, you know, ultimately could lead to dialysis, because the kidneys are responsible for filtering our blood. Another one of the end effects, a lot of people have a family member, a distant aunt or uncle, who had to lose a toe. Often diabetes affects the nerves in our feet and our hands as well, and so essentially you could have a small wound on your foot go unnoticed because you don't actually feel pain from it, unfortunately, because those fibers have been damaged, and so then that's how diabetics unfortunately run that risk of having to have, you know, an amputation. And so the important thing, you know, to know is that you can jump off of that. You know, you have to, if you're diabetic, you have to do something drastic to reverse it, halt it in its tracks to the greatest of your ability. I mean, if you catch it early enough and your pancreas is still secreting insulin, you can reverse the disease almost entirely. You can definitely reverse the numbers to a non-diabetic range, you know. And so if you can cure your diabetes, would you want to know how, you know, is the question. And I think that it's people have kind of heard this, but, you know, it's like a black or white. Do you want to reverse this or not? And it took some effort, obviously, to make some changes. And, you know, supplementation can absolutely help sensitize the cells to the effects of insulin. You know, like I know alpha lipoic acid and the zinc and the chromium, those types of things can be important. And I think a lot of that gets glossed over, unfortunately, often. And so,
right.
Yeah, so it's
huge, though. I mean, look at everything you just said, that one person with the one diagnosis of diabetes can experience as a result, and what your patient was able to thwart off just by spending a little more time with you and really understanding and grasping the severity of what that diagnosis can mean. And I mean, that's a major difference there in terms of direct primary care versus traditional care. And that doesn't, and I keep going back to this, and I do this only because I don't want to offend anybody, but it doesn't mean that anybody has a bad doctor. I just want to make that clear, that we're not saying that at all. We're just saying this is a different approach. So, and this is an approach that the outcomes can be greater by virtue of spending more time with your actual doctor. That being said, though, you know, there's just so many things to talk about with this. As far as the testing, as far as people being able to, we already know about how accessible you are. But now, what about the person that is, you know, sicker? We talked about diabetes, obviously, that can lead to major illness.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the people that are, you know, really having some severe issues? How does direct primary care help them?
Well, you know, I think, you know, a lot of patients who have different conditions, you know, they're going to need to be seeing specialists as well. And so I think that part of why patients feel so vulnerable in the system is because, you know, you kind of have the primary care doc and you have your specialist, and sometimes they're not able to all kind of be in the same conversation. I don't mean literally in the same conversation, but just kind of like all kept in touch. And, you know, I feel very fortunate that, you know, when I send a patient to the specialist, I often have the ability to close the loop, to have an actual conversation with the doc. You know, what was the plan? You know, what could I have done differently, you know, leading up to their visit with you and that kind of thing. Or the patient comes back and says like, oh, you know, I saw the specialist and they said I needed this, this, and this. And you know, oh, well, if you do that through us, you know, cause if you do it, you know, through them and it's not covered by insurance, which a lot of times certain things wouldn't be, or they're going to apply to people's deductibles, but things that are done at our office are obviously done at a significant discount, so patients can take advantage of the price. You know, the price being, you know, significantly more affordable if it's done through us. But essentially, quarterbacking for patients, you know, just trying to make sure that everybody's on the same page. It's easier said than done, but I definitely feel fortunate to have the ability to actually do that, you know, and keep keep everybody in the loop and try to, because I don't see patients in the hospital, but I have a patient who's been in the hospital recently who kind of texts me with updates, and she's like, here, take my doctor's cell phone number, to her doctor, call her right now. She wants to hear from you, and then I get a call. It's like magic, right? So that's really nice, just that patients know that line of communication is open. That way, when it comes to follow-up, we're not missing our mark or skipping over, one of the important issues that needed to be followed up upon.
But the thing is when you're saying that, I mean, we need to back up a little bit and let's just talk. I mean, everybody knows that if they're sent to a specialist in the traditional world, they're going to be sent to a specialist, and then that report needs to be sent to the primary care physician, and you might see your primary care physician a month or 3 months later, and they see the report that's now a month or 3 months old. Or if it's more urgent than that, you're going to see your doc in a couple of weeks and you're going to get a report and you're going to rely on what's written in the report. And docs really are pretty good about capturing mostly everything in a report.
Right.
The difference is the conversation is, the actual person-to-person conversation can lead to so many different avenues for the point
right.
of care for that person as opposed
right.
to a piece of paper.
Right.
So, I mean, that's just huge in itself. And if anybody wants to understand that more clearly, think about it. If you get something in writing and you read it, it's done, it's over with, you've read it, okay, that's what you know. But if you get that person on the phone that wrote it and you start asking
right.
questions based on what they've said, you have a totally different conversation going on, and now you have a whole lot of different information just on anything.
Yeah, and a lot of times patients aren't, unable to express what they're trying to express to the specialist. And so sometimes it's just helpful so that the specialist knows, what they're coming there for. Like, what are we trying to accomplish? And what's already been done? What testing has been done already? Thus far, so that we can not waste time recreating the wheel, doing the whole workup and just figure out what we need to do from here forth.
Right. So when you're talking about direct primary care with people and they're asking you, they're saying, okay, I want to do this, but I'm afraid because I don't really know what it'll mean, and do I have to give up? So let's just get some of those questions out of the way. And then we've got one on the blog anyway. Do I need to give up my doctor as I know it now when I first start with you, or can I gradually do that?
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, any given patient should only have one primary care doc, and that's mostly for safety reasons, that if you have, a visit and the meds changed and then the paperwork doesn't make it over and we don't know what was done over there, what vaccine was given, what wasn't, it can get a little hairy, but it's not like a hard, dark line. It's just ideally, you pick a side. But it doesn't, it doesn't need to be hasty. And if there's a little overlap, that's fine. And you might come over and decide you don't want to switch, and that's fine too. But that's kind of the nice thing is that you essentially pay by the month at our practice. And so if it's working for everybody, it's working for everybody. If it's not, no hard feelings, and you can move along. But that way, you're paying each month and, we're kind of earning, you as a patient each month.
Well, and that's a great point, it just makes perfect sense that, if there's a small overlap, fine, but understand, it's going to be difficult to juggle two different doctors with two different plans.
It's just for safety purposes.
But,
it's just a little better to, ultimately pick
right.
a side, but, it takes
now,
a little
what,
bit of time.
Now, what about medications with you? I mean, do people get medications through you?
So we have an in-house dispensary that we stock a lot of generic medications and, essentially we infer the savings along to the patient, confer the savings along to the patient. And so we buy wholesale and basically mark up for a negligible amount. And so a lot of things that that we prescribe, we can actually fill right there in the office. Other things we send out to pharmacies. And for uninsured patients, we use GoodRx a lot, which is an awesome app. If anybody doesn't have it who's uninsured, you type in the name of a med and your zip code, and it will tell you what prices you will find that medication at surrounding pharmacies. So that's fantastic. You could see a difference of like hundreds of dollars sometimes with the GoodRx coupons.
I've seen that advertised. I really was unfamiliar with that app, so thank you. It's a goodrx.com, or is that where they get?
Yep,
I mean, I'm sorry, they go on the app.
And then
the app.
Yep, there's the website or the app. Mm-hmm.
Cool. That's great to know. So, and that's in any that's nationwide, right?
I think it's nationwide.
Yeah, I think it is too. I think it's nationwide, and I think that it's probably a good thing for everybody to have. And
sure.
Yeah. So you pretty much have all bases covered for people. You know, you've pretty much said, okay, this is what people are going to experience. How do we make this the best situation possible? And we gotta go from there. Did I get that right?
Yes. Yeah, from the standpoint of the, you know, the labs and, you know, the meds, and we do procedures as well in the office. The sort of procedure, there's no cost for, but if something needs to be sent out to the pathology lab, there's like a separate fee we send to a lab in Boise, Idaho, actually. It's like $70 per specimen typically, so, which is, you know, significantly cheaper than what the insurance rate would be.
Yeah, really. That's a very decent price. Yeah.
Yeah, so mold removal.
And I think, you know, it's important to say that most people might pay through their insurance and not really pay attention to what the actual cost is, but everybody gets those statement of benefits, and they say that, like, the actual cost is $350 and you owe, you know, $70.
Right.
But, you know, pay attention to that, because if the actual cost is $300 and they come to you and the actual cost is $70 for the same thing, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, just overall, we have to have that awareness of the cost of healthcare, because it's been the lack of awareness that has driven the cost of healthcare up. When you have the provider and the patient interacting and billing, and neither of them know how much anything costs, that becomes a problem. And
that's why
we're seeing crazy things like $80 for an aspirin if you're admitted to the hospital, you know, and the list could go on and on, you know, to infinity. But that's unreasonable. And so direct primary care is truly a free market economy in medicine. And so, the purpose being pricing transparency and driving the cost of healthcare down.
Wow. Well, and so how many of these are, I know you're in Orlando, but how many of these, how's this picking up throughout the country?
Oh, gosh. Now there are hundreds. The movement has become more widespread in the recent past because of some outspoken docs who are kind of leading the charge, who are, being mentors to doctors who are wanting to kind of develop a practice in this model. And so we followed the model of Atlas, which is a direct primary care company out of Kansas. And so we're kind of modeled after them. But Dr. Josh Umbert is very vocal, very active politically. And, you know, he turns up on Sean Hannity and different shows that are discussing, you know, the healthcare climate and what we can do about it. And so, a lot of the practices are kind of micro, you know, and one doctor and you know, seeing their patient panel in their little happy bubble. And so that's why a lot of people haven't heard about it, you know, on a broader scale, because the doctors then become happy, right? And they're like doing their thing, they've got their patients, everything's working great, but they don't really have the desire to really like expand or grow. They're just happy where they are. So
right.
So if you haven't heard about it, that's probably why. But yeah,
the
no,
doctors
it's becoming more popular.
They're good.
Yeah, no, that, yeah, then they're like, okay, you know, I'm good. So, but yeah, we'll look at it some more. I think there's like a total of 3 in Orlando. Another one is opening up toward the beach. I mean, if you DPC Mapper is what's it called? I think DPC Frontier is a website that you can kind of look and learn about direct primary care, and you can see geographically where all the practices are located, and it's definitely spreading. It's spreading like wildfire, truly. I mean, it's a big movement, and doctors are inspired again. Doctors are not burning out.
Well,
they're happy.
Well,
let's just
hold it right there. Let's talk about that. Doctors are inspired again. Let's talk about that. Just, we have a couple more minutes we're getting. I just want to remind everybody to kind of, if you want to ask a question, to press the number 1 to get in the queue to ask a question. And you can also catch us on the blog page on Facebook. And that's the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio page. So I got that out of the way. But what I wanted to say was doctors are inspired again. And I think we did not hit on that. We have a couple of minutes. If you know, we're going to wait to see if anybody has any questions. But let's talk about why doctors have not been inspired. You know, just to take a minute or two
yeah.
to talk about that.
Well,
why things have evolved in this direction.
That doctors, as a general rule, have these great thoughts when they're young and they're going, you know, for school and training about how they're going to really, like, impact people and, you know, make a difference and really, like, you know, have that ability to connect with people. And then it becomes very disenchanting when you're in a big healthcare system and you have the administration breathing down your neck that you're not seeing enough patients and you're on a roller coaster. Then you're in a moral dilemma, right? You really want to listen
mm-hmm.
to Mrs. Johnson's, you know, several different complaints, and you want to hold her hand because she's going through something difficult or what have you. But you have 4 patients roomed and maybe 2 in the waiting room. And that takes away your fulfillment in medicine. When you have to walk out the door on somebody who is vulnerable, who is sick, not doing well, that's what you went into medicine for, was to be there for that person, right? But you're forced, because you're in a system, you're forced to stop listening, right? And to move on, because otherwise you're going to actually drown. And so that's where you're seeing doctors burning out, doctors leaving medicine. Primary care, unfortunately, you know, I think along with ER probably has, you know, the higher burnout rate, you know, one of the higher burnout rates, you know, amongst doctors, because they're just faced with a reality that's not really possible. You know, it's just very,
yeah.
very difficult to sustain life in the regular system. It's doable, but it's exhausting, and it's not ideal.
So, well, and I thank you for making that point, because, you know, we kind of missed that at the beginning of the show. Why are doctors doing this?
Well, who cares
and so,
about doctors? It's about patients, right? But honestly, from my perspective, you know, it's just, I've been in both realities, you know, and so it's definitely an important, you know, and I talk to a lot of docs, so I'm keen to that, but ultimately it comes down to the patient. And their experience,
well, but,
you know.
Yeah, and but it's both, because if the docs, I mean, think about that. If the docs are getting burned out in the traditional sense, then
right.
it doesn't really lend a whole lot of ability on their parts
yeah.
to be able to really focus on the patient. So it's kind of
difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of like a chicken egg kind of thing. It's like, if the doc's not
mm-hmm.
happy, the patient can't be happy, you know. And it, I don't mean happy in that, oh, you know, be elated on a daily basis, I love my job, but at least no, I want to be able to do my job.
Fulfilled.
And this thing has been going on for years.
Right.
You know, okay. I mean, I know a number of docs that have just gotten, that just got out because they didn't want
yeah.
to be told how many people to see on a daily basis. They didn't want to be told what to do with their patients. They didn't want to be told that they have to run a particular test that they knew, you know, wasn't necessary by virtue of some algorithm that was generated
right.
by, you know, whatever box was checked
right.
initially.
Right.
You know, I know a number of docs that just left. They just said, I'm done. Couple of them moved out to California, others moved out somewhere, and they're doing something totally different. But you know, the ones that have stayed have learned to work within the system. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're happy, and you're right. You guys go through a whole lot of stuff to become doctors. There's a lot of time. It's a lot of education. It's a lot of life. You know, you've given
sacrifice.
Up a lot of your
missing
life
birthdays,
to get to this
missing
point.
Trips, missing weddings.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sacrifice, and then you get out into the real world, and you're being told, this is how you do it, and only this way. So now. Some of you, like you, are taking the step to say, no, I you know, that's not why I did this. I did this for a reason, and you're staying true to what you know, where you started and why you did this. And that in itself has to be recognized, because it's not just, hey, here's a direct primary care model, this is great for you. This is, hey, your doctor's happy too. And if your doctor is absolutely, like, you know, going for, this is really what I can do for my patients, imagine the kind of care that you can get. Does that kind of sum it up?
Yeah.
Does that help?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so
away that
you
rush,
as doctor saying,
factor,
who cares about the patient? Yeah, I mean, who cares about the
right.
doctor? It's the patient. I would expect that from a doc like you that's so involved with your patients. But from the outside looking in, it's both to make it really work. You know, you have to be happy. The
yeah,
patient
makes
has
sense. Right.
So, yeah. Wow. You do fabulous, fabulous things, and you've got... You've got so much, so many more things to do, and I just look forward. I'm always so grateful for you to come on this show and talk to us, and I just look forward to watching you continue to grow, because I think the first time we talked to you, it just started, and it was before my radio show even. You had just started the practice.
Right,
you
yep.
were just, like, you know, kind of opening the doors.
Right.
And now,
yeah, yeah.
you know, you know, you're pretty well established, and you're just continuing to forge ahead and do great things and new things, and always, and when you come on this show, you always share with us something that we can all just benefit. So how do people get in touch with you if they want to? Because we do have a lot of local people that listen.
Yeah.
So can you give out your information?
So the website is www.mydirectmd.com, and our office phone number, 407-367-5676. And you can find us on Facebook and all that, 407-367-5676.
Right. And you are on Facebook, and we already know that once they join you, they can... You know, I think the other side of the show is we should probably have named this a little differently. We should have said, how well does your doctor know you, and how well do you know your doctor? Because it's kind of like another one of those work the same way. You know, if I spend a lot of time with you, I get to know you a little bit too, right?
Yep. Does go both ways.
Yeah, that's very great. That's great. Thank you so very much. I look forward to having you back and saying and seeing what else we can get into. I think we hit on a couple of topics tonight that you and I should talk about in the future. Maybe kind of expand and maybe ask some of your colleagues to come on with us and have a group discussion.
Yeah,
we'll talk
absolutely.
About, Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll figure that out. But in the meantime, we'll see you back here in 2 weeks where we're going to talk about some special needs people and how to work with their health needs and how functional and beneficial they are to our society and the kinds of wonderful things that they're doing that maybe you don't even know about. So with that being said, I'm going to say thank you very much, Dr. Muzzy, and tell everybody good night, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much, Carol. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Well, we're not going to do any music. There we go. Good night, everybody.